when you get down past surface differences, what really makes churches different is their feeling about the authority of the Bible. I would like for the next two or three Sundays to speak about that. Let's begin this morning by admitting that it's fun to know things, just to know them. They don't even have to be useful. It's pleasant to know who painted the picture, who wrote the poem. It's fun to solve a crossword puzzle, to catch on to an allusion in a movie or a novel. It doesn't have to be a big thing. It's fun to know all sorts of little things, which is why Trivial Pursuits went over so well for a while, until the people who didn't know got tired of being crushed by the people who did and wouldn't play anymore. So partly for fun and partly to set up a story, let me ask you a question. Do you know for sure what a Camelite is, and how to define one so that everyone else would know? I invite you to raise your hand if you can describe a Camelite. Well, you can live a long and happy life without knowing what a Camelite is. Although hundreds of thousands of people in the Deep South could answer that question. Camelite is the nickname given in the late 19th century to the followers of Alexander Camel, a distinguished gentleman who founded the Christian churches and the churches of Christ. There were many good things about these people, but one unpleasant thing was that many of his disciples became so violently anti-Catholic and anti-Pope that it was hard for them even to have social contact with anyone who belonged to the Roman Church. Throughout the first half of this century, they would never even have dreamed that a Catholic might one day be elected president. And you can bet that very few of them voted for John Kennedy. All of which brings me to the story. Years ago, when I was teaching at Washington University, my class came to a place in Robert Penn Warren's novel, All the King's Men, where a character is said to do something, shake hands with a rival, I've forgotten what it was, but he was said to have done that, and I'm quoting now, with all the reluctance of the Pope offering his toe to the kiss of a Camelite. Now, you know enough already to catch on to Warren's little joke. The Holy Father might extend his toe to be kissed by the faithful in Rome, but he wouldn't want to do it in Alabama, among the Camelites, where one of them would almost certainly try to bite it off. But the illusion was totally lost on my class. I said, "Do you have any idea what a Camelite is?" There was one of those great silences that often occur in classes, until finally one girl held up her hand to make a guess about what a Camelite might be. She said, I'm not sure, but I think it's a female camel." I don't know by what mental process she got there, but she wanted the joy of knowing, even if she didn't know. When she got home that night, after I had explained the illusion, she probably sat down to dinner and said, "Mom, I'll bet you have no idea what a Camelite is." She had become an expert, no matter how trivial the topic, and everybody enjoys being an expert. Not only because it's simply fun to know, but also because people are impressed by experts. So much so that it often pays to be an expert. You don't even actually have to be one, so long as you have the talent to make people think you are. And the result is that there are more people posing as experts now than ever before in the history of this planet. They are busy and well paid because the demand is enormous. People are hungry for assurance and for absolute answers. And they go from one self-styled expert to another to find what they want. Now, I realize this is not a revelation to you. Every student of human nature understands the appetite for certainty. The problem is that people are always looking for more of it than it's possible to have. And because they are, they become putty in the hands of any charismatic prophet or guru who is bold and confident, who throws away the color gray and paints everything either white or black. Our very questions give us away. How can I be sure? How can I know what to believe? Please tell me what to think. This is precisely why churches with rigid and absolute creeds are more popular than churches that say, read, listen, think for yourself, experience Jesus of Nazareth in some honest way of your own, and out of all that, fashion a creed that is really yours. But freedom is frightening. We love to talk about freedom. It just scares us to death to practice it. We don't want a leader who says, help me solve a complex problem. We want a leader who says, I know exactly what to do. Vote for me and I'll take care of things. And authoritarian churches, which grow faster than churches that prize freedom, talk the same way. We have the truth. We are the only way. Come to us and we'll punch a ticket for you straight through to heaven. The church of my childhood once had a booth at the New York World's Fair in which a computer was programmed to punch out an answer for any religious question a customer could ask, at least so long as they were the right questions. What kind of baptism does God accept? Answer, immersion, Acts 8:38. What kind of music does God accept? Answer, a cappella, Colossians 3:16. But ask a tough one. Is abortion ever a legitimate option? Are sexual preferences deliberately chosen, or are they determined by forces beyond our control? Can a person believe in evolution and still believe in God? Ask one of those, and you blew the circuit. But we want to feel that we have some body of truth that we carry around in our heads, so that when we have to make a choice, we have something to fall back on. So how do we know? When does what we have been told really and truly become authoritative for our lives? I would offer this as a beginning. All truth has to validate itself in your own experience before you can claim it as your own. Example. My dad said, don't look down on the floor and bend over to retrieve something when you're driving. That's dangerous. He was the expert. I said, yes, sir. And if you had said, do you believe that to be the truth? I would have said, I certainly do. But it was theoretical and not really very important until one day when I bent over and down to pick up a map off the floor and ran into an iron highway marker at the edge of the road. After that, I was a true convert. I had my own irresistible conviction that it was best to keep one's eye on the road. But of course, we can't validate everything that way, so we rely on shortcuts. Find an expert, a political party, a church, hand your mind over, accept all 10 items in the creed, even if a buzzer goes off with some of them, and be at peace. And you can be. Because having to think for yourself is not very peaceful. When Claire Booth Luce surprised her friends by converting to Catholicism, she explained that she did it because she simply did not want to think about the complexities of the life of faith anymore. She had turned them over to the Holy Father. I understand what she did and why, but I could never in a million years do it. I want my mind challenged by other people, but I want to keep it. In one of the magazines I get, not all of them requested, I saw a remarkable statement the other day. It was printed by some elders who govern a church in Florida, and who obviously have some trouble maintaining their authority over the congregation. This is what they say. It is increasingly difficult to teach the Bible these days. Everyone has his own Bible. The Mormons, Jehovah's Witnesses, Christian Scientists, and others have long since published their own Bibles to teach their doctrine. Now the denominations, and in case you don't know who they are, that means all false churches like Methodists, Baptists, Presbyterians, Congregationalists, are doing the same thing. I didn't know we had our own Bible, but I was pleased to hear it. In view of this, we request that all teachers and those who have a public part please confine their teaching to the use of the King James Version or the American Standard 1901 edition. Any use of the so-called modern versions will be limited to personal and private use. We feel sure we will have your cooperation in this matter. The last line may sound polite, but I know that particular church very well. What it means is that if you try reading the New English Bible or the Revised Standard or the Jerusalem Bible in that church, you'll be out on your ear. Their authority is not even simply the Bible, but a particular version of it. Anything translated in the last 75 years is ruled out. Now, what makes that so incredible is that there has been an explosion of biblical knowledge in the last 75 years. More has been learned about textual study, manuscript differences, comparative literature, Near East Semitic languages than in all the centuries that have gone before. Yet here are men so fearful that their people will discover a new truth that they ban all group study of that knowledge. But to be afraid of discovering a new truth means that you think you now have all there is. And that puts an end to any chance of growing. St. Thomas Aquinas wrote an interesting thing once. I have seen that which makes all that I have previously taught and written seem like chaff to me. One of the best religious minds in Christian history, and he is saying, once in my life, when I was sure I was right, I was not as right as I thought. Now, surely those of us who know hardly half of what he knew could say to ourselves at any moment, this is the highest truth I know at the moment. I act on it because I have no other. But even as I act on it, I realize that one day I may know more and find this inadequate. And that would be a welcome attitude in Christendom. I like to think that this has been the way of Congregationalists when they are at their best. They have a history of freedom in thought, of saying to one another that the deepest truths are what we discover to be true in actual experience, not the secondhand comments of someone who fashioned a creed a century ago and founded a church on it. It seems so strange to me that we forget what kind of men Wesley and Luther, Camel and Knox, Paul and Aquinas were. Every single one challenged the orthodoxy of his day. Put each one in America right now in 1988. Expose each one to modern discoveries. Give them the vast libraries of new biblical knowledge, and not a one of them would say or even dream of saying, I had the whole truth in my lifetime. Any church that honors me should think everything I thought and nothing else. They once used every ounce of mind and every piece of research they had available to keep up with expanding knowledge. Don't think for a moment that they wouldn't do the same now. And their respective churches might very well disown them. If we are going to know who and what we are, you need to understand exactly what I am saying, because many churches would not accept it. Their strongest plea is for absolute certainty. We say, come and join us in the search for truth. Some of them say, come join us and we will give you the truth. That is not an appealing sentence to me. I'd rather hear something like this. We have found in this church, through study and experience, some things we hold to be true. If you come to a place in your life where they may also commend themselves to you, we'd be happy to have you walk with us. But we do not profess to have a monopoly on truth, nor do we profess to be the best possible church for every possible kind of person. I say that appeals to me, but the plain truth is that it does not appeal to a great many people who are interested in religion. Tell them that they must live with a considerable measure of uncertainty, and they are uncomfortable. Life is uncertain enough in many ways. They want to find at least one area where they can be positive and where it is not really necessary to take much thought about it. So they go hunting for someone who knows for sure. And when they have found such a person, they latch on and become a disciple. If someone were to give me my choice of a religious nickname to wear, I would pick the word learner. The truth is immense, every vessel which tries to contain it is imperfect, and all any sensible person can claim to be is a learner. The new members who will come in to UCC next week will, among other things, join us as students, free to accept what makes sense to them, free to reject what as yet does not. We would have it no other way. And next Sunday morning, on this same general topic, I shall invite you to be students again. Thank you for listening, as you always do.